night and you closed the door behind you. Were you walking in your sleep or were you just too tired to notice all the watchful eyes upon you? There's the man who does the maintenance and the maid who cleans the carpets in the hall. And the guard down in the lobby through a hidden TV camera saw it all.
He's watching you all the time. Terrible Tommy's golem. Terrible Tommy's Frankenstein. Right here in the bunker again. This is Tuesday. Normally we'd have Sling Blade on here, but his work schedule going to put him over till tomorrow morning, which I know you'll be waiting for with bated breath like me. That's right. We're at P.O. Box 401. Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. The big website is resist.com. And my email address, in case you don't have it, tmthomasmary_metzger@yahoo.com. That's right. And our big national phone number, which is picking up speed. People are finally figuring out how to get to it. People that don't know about it, and that's 559-670-1473. I just changed the message, and it was about a guy talking about how crazy these people are. They're always claiming to be part Indian. Now, you probably heard that too. I've heard it 1,000 times. My mother even was into that a little bit. She said one time that we had a relative that was an Indian princess. I don't know where she got that stuff, but a Mongol princess. Well, that could be. You could be part Indian way back someplace. I mean, that's no big deal, and still be plenty Aryan, white, no problem. This thing of getting worried about small percentages of some other race is ridiculous. You know, we look at you, we look at your stature, we look at your head, We look at your hair. We look at your eyes. And then we want to know what you're thinking. And if you're not thinking, Arian, we don't care what you look like. So anyhow, I answered some of the fellow's questions about that on the phone message. So you go on up there and see what you think. And if you got questions for me to either put on that phone machine or that phone service or on here, ask them and I'll answer them the best I can. And if I don't have the answer, I'll dig it out of my library for you. And if you disagree with me, then tell me why, and I'll put that out there too so everybody can see it. We don't mess around here. We're not a bunch of, forget what they used to call that, I don't know, like ne'er-do-wells or stuff like that. We don't stand on all that bullshit here. You don't like it? Tell me so. If you're offended, tell me why. If you're not offended, tell me why. That sounds like a song. What was the name of that song? Rock and roll song? Tell me why, tell me why. Yeah. I like those old rock and roll songs. I sing them going down the road in my little old truck. Yeah, I do. People look over at me and say, who is that crazy son of a bitch? I just smile and say, howdy. You know, in fact, let me see if I can find that question about the Indians and play it for you here. And then you can go up there to 559-670-1473 and hear my answer. And then leave your message at the end of the message, end of my message. And go on out there with your felt pen and put up that phone number. For a quick date, call this number, 559-670-1473. You know, put anything up there you can to get people calling. Especially you construction guys in those construction shacks all around the place. We used to get a lot more referrals that way. Come on, get busy, get busy.
All these white people that say they're part Indian, man, I've been hearing that my whole life, especially the people down south. And you look at them, and obviously, they're 100% white. I don't know what the deal is. I guess the old Western movies where Indians were were played by white people with black wigs on, you know, tall, slender white people with black wigs. They never see a real Indian as a short, squat. Well, hell, they're all around them. Mestizos are many damn Indians, but I think the only Indian most of these whites have had them is Chief Pokemhard.
Well, anyhow, you can go up to 559-670-1473 and hear my answer to this young man. Well, you know, the whole Western saga was seen through the eyes and projected through the eyes and movies made through the eyes of Jews, Jewish-owned film companies, and white Christians, that they saw everything distorted. Many times the Mongols were living sometimes a more environmentally safe life than a lot of the whites. Of course, not all the time, but because the Mongols were destructive of environmental things like buffalo, running hundreds of them off the cliffs into the gorges and just taking a little of the meat, leaving the rest to rot, things like that. But in the old days, when I was a kid, you know, Indians were always bad. Mongols were always bad. Now, that's not true. You know that. And in the new movies, Mongols are all good. They didn't ever seem to find a happy medium. Once in a while, you'll see a film where they treat it with a little bit of intellect, but mostly not. Like I've told you before, early on in my family, I had become a Catholic. I had taken on the Catholic religion for a while, from about 1960s I'd say about 64, 65 until about 70, I think. But anyhow, during that time, we didn't have a Catholic school there in Fallbrook, California. So the only Catholic school was up at the Indian Reservation, the Pala Indians. And so they used to bus these white kids up there to that Indian Reservation to go to school. Well, actually, it was pretty good education because those white nuns didn't take any crap from anybody. They whop you on the head whether you're Indian or white. But I became a member of their parent-teachers association for a while. And, of course, as usual, the white parents did all the work. The big fat Indians didn't do anything, very little. And so I got to view their lifestyle firsthand. Of course, these were Stone Age Indians. I mean, they're not like the Cherokee and the higher class Indians. And that's another thing. Indians come in all physical types, tall, skinny ones, short, fat ones. Usually the shorter and the fatter, the more primitive they are. I mean, I can't judge them all that way, but at this Pala Indian Reservation, there were a lot of fat people, and there were a lot of fat people sitting on their asses. Anyhow, I got in an argument with this one Indian lady, Mongol lady, one day. Her name was Novato, I believe. And I said, Mrs. Novato, do you know the great chiefs of the Indian nation wouldn't have anything to do with you people today? They would spit on you. You're not noble, savage. You're welfare-receiving bums. That's what you are. And God, she'd never been talked to that way, I guess. Well, since that time, they have gotten themselves an Indian or a Mongol casino. Let's always try to correct our speech. Call them Mongols. Don't call them Indians. They're not Indians. And I guess they pay these Mongols, there you go, Mongols thousands of dollars just to don't come around the casino. You just stay over there in your house trailer across the road, drink your wine, and keep quiet because we're running the show. So they have a few Indians, Mongols, working in the casino, usually run by the Jews, supposedly for the Mongols. But most of the people employed in the casino are not not Mongols. It's an interesting situation. Anyhow, just remember that Geronimo, the leader, I guess, of the Apache Nation, when he was cornered down in Arizona, I believe it was, yeah, I'm pretty sure, by the U.S. Army Cavalry, he only had 20 guys. He only had 20 guys. All the rest of these so-called great Mongol warriors dutifully accepted the government's blankets and food and Christianity and went on the reservation and became slaves. Actually, worse than slaves, because they really didn't do any work much at all, I guess. Maybe some. They'd have been better off working every day. But I guess they did put them to work some way, sometime. I mean, I know there's a big church in Oceanside, California, an old mission church. And when I first went over and took a tour of the place, they had a little jail. And it was just a small, it's smaller than the prisons have today, 8x10 or something like that, maybe less. And I asked the priest, I said, well, who was put in here? Oh, unruly Indians, unruly Mongols. If they got out of line, in other words, they didn't want to take that padre's shit, they throw them in there. And so, it was worse when they secularized the Mexican system. And I remember in the books that I read about the big ranches out there in Southern California where they had Mongol tribes around. They rounded them up, and they were literal slaves. Once the, you know, under the religious rod of steel, it was tough, but it wasn't as tough as under the secular. Pio Pico, I think, the Pico brothers ran hundreds of acres. They're not too far from where I lived. And they forced marched these Mongols from around Temecula, California, all the way up to Oceanside, California, which is, what, 25 miles at least on foot. So, and the interesting story to that is when the war with Mexico broke out and General Kearney and his Mormon brigade came marching up through there, they freed all these Mongols, as much as freedom means, I mean, you know. And the Mongols greeted the U.S. troops as great deliverers. Yeah. Not oppressors, but great deliverers from the Spanish, from the Pico brothers and all the hierarchy stuff in Mexico. Anyhow, that's a little side trip we took there and about the Mongols. And I've met some pretty stand-up Mongol guys that were very good about a lot of things, but they weren't good at drinking. There's something about that Asian Mongol strain that I used to think it was terrible. It was very racist, back before I was a racist, that the U.S. government made it illegal to sell booze to the Indians, to the Mongols. Well, when I lived in Indiana, that was one thing. When I got to California and began to see some of the Mongols around and see them in bars and stuff, those guys can't drink at all, man. They go totally off the wall with a few drinks. I'm telling you. So anyhow, there's something in their makeup that Mongols should not drink. And, of course, that's where a lot of the atrocities came against white people. They'd get drunk. Somebody'd sell them booze. They'd get all drunked up, and they'd go out and murder and rape white people back in the day. It probably has to do with that simian, that reptilian part of the brain. I've always had a theory that the reason drugs can cause people to do some very horrendous, torturous things, that somehow the drugs bypassed the mammalian brain, the human brain cortex went back through the mammalian brain into the reptilian brain. It's right on the top of your spine. And once these type of things get to that reptilian primordial part of your brain, you can do anything, no matter how evil it is to regular people. So I've always had a theory. I think some races, I think the Mongols, when they drink or they take drugs, it's faster for some reason. That reptilian brain is activated faster than on an Aryan. Maybe it's because an Aryan has a larger frontal lobe, it's thicker, it takes longer to get through it. I don't know. What the hell? I'm just a bartender here. What do I know? You remember that ad that came out in the 70s? Maybe it was the 80s. Iron Eyes Coda? No, that wasn't. Not Coda. Cody? This old Mongol, supposedly honorable, wonderful guy that was crying because people were throwing their crap on the ground. Well, he'd never been up to that Palo Reservation because everybody threw everything on the ground. Even their kids. But just think of that. Geronimo and the true chiefs of the Indian nations that fought to the death, usually. They captured Geronimo. He didn't fight to the death. But most of the time, a Mongol war horse would fight to the death. And we got to give them respect for that. Well, let's get a little Paki input to this situation in Iraq. Now remember, I don't care. Religious fanatics, I mean, I can't stop them from killing each other. And I'm not promoting that they kill each other. So, I don't care, but we do have to pay attention to it as it may affect our particular way of thinking. So, just because I play this stuff doesn't mean I'm crying crocodile tears for anybody. Christians, Islam, Judaism, anything like that. Because I'm not into that stuff.
On News Network, I'm Jess Lenore in Baltimore. Welcome to this latest edition of the Prashad Report. We're now joined by Vijay Prashad. He's joining us from Northampton, Massachusetts. His most recent book is The Poor Nations, A Possible History of the Global South. Thank you so much for joining us again, Vijay.
Thanks, Joseph.
So we know you've been closely following the ongoing political turmoil in Iraq. Can you give us an update about the latest of what's happening there?
Well, there are a series of problems happening in Iraq. One of them has been a long-standing political problem in Baghdad over the government and government formation. The second one is a much more dramatic event, and that is the emergence of the Islamic State as a full-blown insurgency in northern Iraq. This morning on August 11th, there was a great deal of drama in Baghdad when tanks appeared in the streets of the capital, surrounded the green zone, surrounded the residence of the president. And what it appeared was going on was that the prime minister, Mr. Nouri al-Maliki, was in some senses putting a coup forward against the constitutional process because he is under threat of removal as the prime minister of Iraq. By about midday, it was clear that the coup attempt had fizzled, if there ever was a coup attempt. And once more, we're back to the problem of a major constitutional crisis because Mr. Maliki's party, which is ruling in coalition, simply doesn't have enough seats in the legislature to continue by itself. So the president has put forward an alternative candidate for prime minister, also for Mr. Maliki's party. This is why it's extremely complicated how the Dawa party, which is Maliki's party, but also the party of Mr. Haider al-Abadi, how this party, the Dawa, is internally divided. It has to, with only 92 seats out of 328, it has to reach out to other parties. So there is this constitutional mess that's in Baghdad. You'd think that Baghdad...
You get an idea what a clusterfuck this is? Maliki, of course, was a hand-picked puppet of the U.S. way back. He was totally incompetent, but he was put in as a puppet, like the United States loves these puppets. So now Maliki said he don't want to give it up because obviously there's plenty of power and money involved in what he's doing. So now he's appointed somebody in his own party to take over. That isn't going to work. So they're surrounding the green zone, this tremendously expensive, probably billion-dollar edifice and area that the U.S. taxpayers, mostly white, built there in Iraq. And they're going to sooner or later burn that some bitch down or blow it up. So that's good. That's good news. I like to see the federales and the military-industrial complex in trouble. In trouble. Because all they know about is bombing. Well, I think most military men know that you can't defeat a country just by bombing. Even Japan, after two atomic bombs were dropped, they were still fighting. It wasn't until later that they decided to give up and surrender. However, they had been trying to surrender before the bombs. I think the bombs gave them a little bit more courage to fight on a while. And you can't defeat a country. Well, number one, you can't defeat a country, period. You can go into it, tear the shit out of it, and then occupy it. But you can't defeat it if the people don't want you to. If they're gonna fight for 1,000 years, you're gonna run out of money doing it. So you gotta have boots on the ground to have martial law or occupy a country. So going around over there dropping these bombs and stuff, and usually hitting sheep and goats out in the field and some poor farmer. You can't run a system that way. It's unconventional warfare. Like I've said before, you need crack. If you're going to play that game, you need crack troops. Fanatical, crack troops. Even more fanatical than the SEALs or Special Forces. And just say, they want Malachi out of there. Go get him. Not thousands, not hundreds. Not even dozens, but a few highly trained snipers go in and get Malachi. You don't have to send hundreds and thousands of troops in on these deals. The reason they don't do this in warfare much, take out the leaders, is because they're afraid that they're going to do the same thing to them, the other side. But the easiest way to stop a confrontation or a war situation or somebody that you consider bad is you take out the top guys. Don't piss around with the bottom. Don't piss around blowing up their houses and everything. Israel could have very simply used the Mossad to go in, search out the Hamas leaders, and kill them. Not that I'm for it, but they could do that. And on the other, conversely, the Hamas leaders could employ professionals to knock out nitwit Netanyahu. Not that hard. They're not always in a bomb-proof building or anything like that. Sometimes they even walk down the street. I don't care how many security guards they've got. One super sniper can get them. And so, don't even take bombs. Well, look at in our own situation with Kennedy. There were no bombs. It was just bullets. And nobody around got hurt, just Kennedy. I mean, when you bomb, lots of people get hurt. Well, anyhow, they know this. The top guys in the government know, but they need to finance the military-industrial complex by bleeding the American public white or brown, whichever it may be. And so they've got to keep make it a big deal. Everything's a big deal. Now look back when Saddam Hussein was supposedly their enemy. They could have knocked him off. They could have paid enough money that somebody in his own clan would have knocked him off. Don't let him bullshit you. So anyhow, if they want somebody dead, they can get him. But they want to make a big show because big show makes lots of money. The arms manufacturers in the United States, in which we manufacture the lion's share of arms in the world, got to keep the money coming in. And the way we keep the money coming in is we give foreign aid, supposedly, but that foreign aid comes right back to the arms manufacturers in this country, and then we spread our weapons all over the world. Now, in the Middle East, hundreds of thousands and all kinds of weapons are sitting over there that now are being used by the ISIS army against incoming Americans. Jesus. You see, it's all a game. Follow the money. It's all a damn game. But what's so crazy is the average white American just can't get it through his head that he's got a corrupt government, and most of the time governments are corrupt. Governments are gangs. when you put a lot of power in one spot, it will become corrupt. It's just the way it goes. That's why if you're going to have a government, it's got to be overthrown about every at least 20 years and start all over with new people. It's the only way you can keep it even close to not becoming totally corrupt. And if you'll read what Jefferson said, that's exactly what he said. We should have a revolution every 20 years to water the tree of liberty with blood. And that's exactly right. We're way too far beyond that. Well, let's take a break here. I got a funny one for you. Listen to this.
How much does Greece owe, Roger?
$367 billion.
Correct. And who do they owe it to?
Mostly to the other European economies.
Correct. How much does Ireland owe?
$865 billion.
Correct. And who do they owe it to?
Other European economies, mostly.
Correct. How much does Spain and Italy owe?
$1 trillion each.
Correct. Who to?
Mainly France, Britain and Germany.
Correct. And how are Germany, France and Britain going, Roger?
Well, they're struggling a bit, aren't they?
Correct. Why?
Because they've lent all these vast amounts of money to other European economies that can't possibly pay them back.
Correct. So what are they going to do?
They're going to have to bail them out.
Correct. Where are they getting the money to do that, Roger?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that one.
How much does Portugal owe?
Hang on a minute. What was the answer to that earlier question?
Just keep answering the questions, Roger. Where is Portugal going to get the money it owes to Germany if Germany can't get back the money that it lent to Italy?
Just a minute. What was the answer to the previous question? The question was, how can broke economies lend money to other broke economies who haven't got any money because they can't pay back the money the broke economy lent to the other broke economy and shouldn't have lent it to them in the first place because the broke economy can't pay it back?
You're wasting very valuable time, Roger. How much money does Spain owe to Italy?
$41 billion, but where are they going to get it?
Correct. What does Italy owe to Spain?
$27 billion, but they haven't got it. They're broke.
Correct. How can they pay each other if neither of them has any money?
They're going to get a bailout, aren't they?
Correct. And where's the money coming from for the bailout?
That's what I'm asking you.
Correct. Why are people selling the European currency and buying the US dollar?
Because the US economy is so much stronger than the European economy.
Correct. Why is that, Roger?
Because it's owned by China.
Correct. And,
Well, does that remind you of the Abbott and Costello bit, Who's on First? I'll have to play that for you young people may have never heard it, but it's just like all these economies. Who's on first? Yeah, who owes who? Where are they going to get the money? I mean, if so-called taxpayers of this country owe $14 trillion, who are we going to borrow it off of? and who are we going to pay it to? it's all crazy. It's all nuts. You understand? We're living in a goddamn insane asylum, and the worst patients are running the show. I heard a guy call in on a radio show last night, and he said that he sent a letter to his congressman bitching about this. What are they going to do about all this expenditures and war and all that kind of stuff? He got a letter back bitching about Obama's taking a vacation and he's going to play golf. Well, shit, I don't care if Obama plays golf every day of the year. We'd be better off if he stayed away. We'd be better off if every goddamn congressman in the Congress just hung out at a whorehouse. I advocated this decades ago, that we build a giant first-class whorehouse across from the Capitol, and we stock it with the best booze and the best prostitutes that money can buy, and give these guys a card, these congressmen and senators, and send them over there and keep them over there as long as we can. We would be so much farther ahead financially, you wouldn't believe. No matter how much they drank and no matter how much they screwed, we would be way ahead of the game. The Congress only was in session for 103 days, or 130 maybe it was, this year. So look at how many hundred days they were out screwing around trying to raise money for the next election. That's what they're doing. So there, and then they didn't pass any bills anyhow, which is good. And then every time they pass a bill, that's a new law to make you a slave. So anyhow, I think things are going great, but it's just the way you got to look at it, the way I look at it. Well, you don't have to, but I think it makes sense. Worse is better. Let the crazy sons of bitches do what they do. Why we worry? Now we got niggers rioting again over in Missouri. Let them riot. I wish 10,000 niggers would riot. Teach Whitey a lesson. There weren't any. I sent out that deal where they were rioting and going into the stores like they always do. They suppose they've got some righteous reason for demonstrating, but the first thing they do is rob, steal, and rape. I never thought that was a reasonable way to demonstrate a problem. But that's the nigger way. And now they always say it's because of the economy's bad, and it's racism, and it's police brutality. The press have always got it all ready to go, and they never say black. You notice that? Do you ever hear them say black? They say use, like that movie with where the guy goes, Joe Pesci goes down to Louisiana and tries to defend his cousin in the court, and he says the use, and the judge says use. What's use? Because Pesci's from Brooklyn. Anyhow, that's what they do. They say it's use. It's never black use. Well, a black teenager, as far as I'm concerned, a black, especially a male teenager, is a man, as far as I'm concerned. And even if he wasn't, he could stick a blade in you just as fast as an adult. Probably a lot faster than a senior like myself. Or they could shoot you. What is this stuff, you know? That gives them a free ride because they're young? No, I'd blast anybody. I don't care whether they're 100 years old or 14 or 10. If they're coming to kill you and rob your store and drag everything out of the place, kill them. Well, the police weren't even there. And the scenes I saw, there were dozens and dozens of niggers going into the store just like they did in Watts, just like they did after Martin Luther King got his ass blown off. Same thing, niggers riot. They don't riot, they steal. It's not a riot, it's an ongoing thievery. Whenever there's no law enforcement, niggers go crazy. You cannot expect them to act like Anglo-Saxons, you know? So anyhow, there they are, no cops, not one cop came into the situation where they're taking all the inventory of these stores out the front. I say let it roll. You know, like that rock and roll song? Let it roll, baby, let it roll. Worse is better, goddammit. And now our enemies are not going to like our position. They want us to react. They want us to go Kluxer. They want us to go Hollywood Nazi. They want us to react. The reason they don't talk about us much or write about us much is because we're not playing their game. I'm not playing their game. I hope you're not playing their game. We're saying, fuck you. Worse is better. Let 10,000 niggers riot in Missouri or New York or L.A. or wherever they are. Let them go. Clean out every goddamn store in the area. Yeah, worse is better. Because sooner or later, it's not going to be a lot of people, sooner or later, this country has a lot of badass white boys. I don't care what you say. Why haven't they done anything so far? Well, they don't have to do anything so far. But they're going to start getting it up to here, to the top of their head, and they're going to start storing this anger, which they've been doing. And I talked to them. And when they start going over the top, they're not going to stop. And it'll come to that. And then Katie bar the door shut, and all you Christian sob sisters get out of the way, because there's going to be a lot of killing. Because it's been a long time coming, but it's coming. Now, I'm making these MP3 files, so some of this stuff is really great. And I'm sending it out day and night, and I get mixed up because I forget to dump one after I've sent it. So if I send you an MP3 file and you've already seen it, just forget it, dump it. I'll try to remember to dump these after I send them, but I can't always be expected to do that because I'm an old man, goddammit. You know, I get a kick out of Rogue Progressive, but he can piss you off because he's got this equality bullshit in him, and he's right on capitalism, predatory capitalism. He's right on the environment. They're tearing the environment to hell and back, and like that. And he goes after the corporations, and he's anti-war, and he's really risking his show by going really big time after Israel now, too. I know he's getting some heat, some big time heat. But he's still a liberal, you know, a liberal in the sense that he, I don't know how you'd put it, but he thinks that he believes in this equality. He doesn't at least espouse any difference in the races or anything like that. And also he has a problem delineating between the white working class and the jerk class, the ruling class. And he does have this sort of a innate thing that he knocks white working people a lot. Now, usually he covers it with some kind of reason, but he's still hard on the white race. Now, on the other hand, he should be hard on the white race a lot of times, and like I am. I mean, you know, if we had any our real enemy is among our own race. And unless we can straighten our own race out, we're screwed. But he's off into the, you know, the Indian thing, the Mongol thing. Oh, they're wonderful and all that kind of stuff. So, but he's the kind of guy, I think, that when the chips go down is going to flop the right way. But who knows? But anyhow, I do run some of his stuff. And don't email me and tell me, oh, he's a goddamn progressive. I know he's a progressive, but on a lot of stuff, he's a hell of a lot farther out in front than the right-wing reactionaries, because they're not out in front of anything. The other one is Mike Church, who's a rogue right-winger. And he's good about a lot of things, and now recently he's come out big on the Israel thing, which I respect him for that. But he's a practicing Catholic, and he gets down on his knees to the Mother Mary and all that kind of stuff. But I you know, as long as he takes the right positions on the things that we agree on, that's fine. So I run some of his stuff, too. So don't tell me that we don't put out all sides of an issue. Put out right, and we put out left. I mean real left and real right, not this bullshit stuff. And then our position. And usually a lot of this stuff melds together. So anyhow, if you'll go up there to the internet and see our news bulletins and stuff, we're putting out these left-wingers and right-wingers. And I think the opposition's starting to get the message, because there's a lot of things that rogue Mike Church or right-wing Mike Church says that Mike Malloy says. You know, they don't listen to each other, but I listen to both of them, you know, when I can. And there's so many things they agree on. And there's, so if we take all the things they agree on and work on those, and then we'll figure out the other stuff later, well, I think that's the way to do things. Now they're trying to justify war with Iran again. Yeah, well, you better watch out. Iran's not Iraq. Iran is not some of these other little countries. Iran has a lot of white people in it. A lot of white Aryans in it. I've seen pictures of their crowds and close-ups of a lot of the women and so forth. And there's a lot of white people there. And so when you go on, if you're going to pick a war with Iran, you're going to get your feathers trimmed, I'm afraid, boys. A growing body of evidence points to a concerted campaign to prepare Americans and the world for war against Iran, because we've always got to have a goddamn war going. What's with these guys? Don't they get enough nookie at home? Don't their wives treat them right, or the kids, do they kick them in the shins, or the dogs bite them or something? These guys are never happy unless they're in a war. That's a sign to me they're not getting any. This is not idle speculation. It fits a pattern that repeatedly preceded previous hostilities. Here are the recent examples on Iran. The claim that Iran is a WMD threat. Pretty much everyone is familiar with the long-term continuing efforts to paint Iran as some kind of a nuclear threat. Yeah, while Israel's got about hundreds of nuclear weapons. Everybody else is armed to the teeth. This ignores the possibility that Iran is telling the truth in contending it has embarked on solely non-military nuclear research. And serious doubts among many experts that Iran is preparing nuclear weapons. But well, so what if they were? Everybody else has got them. Perhaps most important, it discounts the fact that many countries, including Iran's arch enemy Israel, have nuclear weapons and disregards the undoubted truth that if a country like Iran ever did launch nuclear weapons, it would be wiped out in a nanosecond. Well, I don't know about that. Creating a very strong disincentive for offensive use. Well, I don't know. At the same time, by encouraging other countries and internal foes to believe that it has nuclear weapons, Iran creates an inexpensive protective shield for its regime. A dangerous game, to be sure, but without further evidence of Iranian nukes, hardly a reason to launch a war that would surely cause even more death and destruction than misguided Iraqi invasion. Oh, well, gotta have more. We gotta sell more weapons or give more weapons away. How does it feel out there if you're working in a weapons manufacturing company here in the United States to be part of the biggest war machine manufacturing business that's ever been and be responsible for the dissemination of millions of weapons of all kinds all throughout the world, all killing people? Do you go down to church on Sunday, get down on your moth-eaten knees and pray to the Jesus or the Mary Mother? Do you, hon? Sure you do. I see you when you go past my house on Sunday. Hundreds of cars with people all dressed up in their nip and tucker going to the church. Yeah. The claim that Iran tried to hire Mexican drug cartel hit squads to kill a Saudi ambassador on U.S. soil fizzled. That's too bad. Anytime they want to knock off a Saudi ambassador, a Saudi anything is fine with me, because they've been behind a whole lot of skullduggery. Remember this one? So ludicrous that even the ultra-cautious corporate news organizations laughed it out of the spotlight. Still, it may have been a test of what will fly, and likely did impact a percentage of the population, particularly those getting their info from the jingoistic stupid outlets like Fox TV. The claim that Iran was complicit in the 9/11 attacks, a federal judge reviewing evidence presented in a lawsuit on behalf of 9/11 victims concluded this month that it proved Iran provided direct support to al-Qaeda specifically for the attacks on September 11, 2001. This one may gain traction due to the powerful lingering emotions of the topic. For complaints about the general operating style of the judge who ruled in the case, click here. because this ruling and the underlying lawsuit are based largely on the claims of defectors, who you cannot depend on their testimony. And past experience shows that defectors frequently trade political valuable assertions for personal benefit. More research is needed on this. Well, I don't know that Iran had anything to do with 9/11, but I'm not even going to talk about 9/11 because they're not going to do anything about it anyhow. Of course, it'd be nice to know the truth, and I think most of the truth is out there. But they're not going to do anything. I mean, so why should I care? Like I said at the time, the chickens have come home to roost. Yeah. That's what I said the day that those planes hit the building. I said, what do you expect the Arab world to do if they were in on it? What do you expect them to do? We screw with them, occupy them, kill them all over the place in horrible weapons of mass destruction, and then you expect them not to fire back? It is further worth noting that the defendant, Iran, was not present to challenge these assertions. In addition, well, they'd be fools to do it. Just like you're a fool to answer questions from a cop or federal agent. If they appeared in court, that would have been sort of an indication of maybe they are guilty. In addition, examination of many of the plaintiffs' assertions shows that they may misrepresent circumstantial evidence. Example, several of the 9/11 hijackers transited Iran on their way to or from Afghanistan, taking advantage of the Iranian practice of not stamping Saudi passports. Well, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald traveled through a whole bunch of states before he wiped out old Lucifer King. So does that make each state guilty of some kind of conspiracy? I think not. This ignores the fact that Iran, which is an enemy of Saudi Arabia, and I wish that they'd take them out, but as long as Saudi Arabia's got plenty of oil, nobody's going to take them out because the whole United States military would pounce on anybody that tried. Anyhow, it makes a practice of not stamping Saudi passports so that Saudi nationals, especially minority Shiites, there you go with religion, do not get in trouble with the Saudi authorities on their returns, similar to Cuba's practice of not stamping American passports. This story is yet to break big, but count on the ruling to be cited increasingly in the months ahead by those pushing for war. Well, that's the entire corporate press. And here are a few past examples, 1990 to 2011. Add your own to the comments section below. Blame Saddam for incubator baby deaths and plots against Bush's father. Provoke him by slant drilling from Kuwait. Then imply no objection if he takes action. Blame him for 9/11 complicity. Falsely tie him to Al-Qaeda. Claim he possesses WMDs. And poses an imminent threat. Misrepresent claims to make it seem like he did not destroy the WMD stocks as ordered. Blame Gaddafi for Lockerbie bombing, mass rapes, mass murder, fund up an uprising, then bomb him for humanitarian reasons when he responds in order to assure his survival. You don't have to approve of these regimes to see that these appear to be, in many cases certainly were, false provocations that reek of ulterior motives. Hint, how many of these countries are oil exporters? In fact, you can abhor these regimes and hope that they will not survive and still realize how problematical it is for the American government to repeatedly foist big lies on its own people. This kind of thing is beneath any administration claiming lofty ideals and purporting to serve the public interest, and something that none of us should feel comfortable being party to. If the public interest is defined as seizing oil wherever it may be found, then, well, that's a conversation we need to have, and quick. There are severe consequences of this definition. Among them, the empowerment of those forces, both corporate and governmental, that profit most from the unbridled development of fossil fuels, and that have good reasons to block the development of renewable sources of energy. They're known today as the 1%, and they are destroying our world. Well, I agree with that. I surely do. You're right. But still, for now, worse is better. You know, they get real excited over this possible voters fraud and making people carry identification, all this stuff. And at one time I would have said, yeah, make everybody carry a card, which, you know, if things were reasonably normal, that would be the case. But I say to hell with it, because there's no reason voting. There's no reason voting. You can't possibly vote this mess out. Nobody's going to vote this mess out. It's just going to gradually deteriorate until there's a civil war of some kind. Some kind of upheaval. That's all there is to it. So, worrying about voting for these bastards, you see how they are on Israel. They're all in lockstep. It don't make any difference whether they're Republican or Democrat. They're afraid of the Jew lobby. So anyhow, just when I see these guys all fighting and arguing over voter fraud, I think it's funny. Number one, the blacks don't have a very good voting record anyhow. In fact, it's piss poor. The Mexicans are even worse. So, but anyhow, you're still going to, it don't make any difference whether you have voters' identification or not. You're still going to vote for the same assholes because you swallow the same bullshit. You say all the time, over and over, same thing. My senator, I'd write him a note, but it doesn't make any do any good. Doesn't do a bit of good. I contacted all these people about depleted uranium poisoning of the troops. I never got a reply. Or they reply like the one did I told you earlier and say, Obama's taking a vacation. That's horrible. It's horrible. Like none of the other presidents ever took vacations or played golf? Bullshit. Eisenhower was always on the golf park. And like I say, they do less harm when they're on the golf course without a radio or a telephone than they do when they're in the Oval Office. So anyhow, if voting would change things, they'd make it illegal. And that's as truism as you can get, man. Hey, did you know the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico that British Petroleum killed is bigger than the state of Connecticut? That's a very big dead zone. Very big. And BP hasn't paid hardly anything. Peanuts. It should have been nationalized. The whole BP operation should have been nationalized the day after they did that crime in the Gulf. Nobody ever talks about nationalization in this country. In other countries, they talk about nationalizing this and nationalizing that, and a lot of times they do. But in this country, no. You can't do that. You can't talk about nationalizing these crooked operations. Like BP is one of the worst. They haven't even paid off all the way the people up in with the Valdez crack up in Alaska. No, they didn't pay but a small percentage. And I told you before, that spill did not have to be doing all the destruction it did. BP had the ships and the outriggers and the skimmers and everything that they were supposed to have on hand to take care of that situation. But it was not on hand. So the Exxon Valdez oil went every which way. These are criminals in high power. Somebody asked me the other day, who's the best president? I get asked that every once in a while. None of them. They're all criminals. Sorry. Based upon simple logic and the things that they've done while in office, all presidents are criminals. Many of them are war criminals. and that's it. So if you're looking for morality out of the White House, that's the last place to look. The very last place to look, no matter how much they give you bullshit about praying to the baby Jesus all the time and going to church on Sunday. That's funny. When George Bush Jr., they take pictures of him when he was going to church and getting all down there on his knees. He's murdering people all over the world. And now you got Obama. He goes to church every Sunday, man. I'll tell you, well, shit, what an insane world we live in. That's about it for today. I'll be back with Sling Blade tomorrow, and he's got some straight scoop, 14-5. Oh, incidentally, Fat Tony Christie's on a fact-finding trip to Mexico. I wonder what that's all about. Forgot that Dale and Roy were big Christians. I shouldn't have run that version. Oh, that's okay. We'll let it slide this time, but don't let it happen again.